70. Foe. Brown took Milgrim to a dim, steamy Vietnamese restaurant, one with no English signage whatever. It felt like the anteroom of a sauna, which Milgrim found agreeable, but smelled of disinfectant, which he could have done without. It had the look of having been something else, long ago, but Milgrim found it impossible to say what that might have been. Perhaps a Scottish tea room. 40s plywood, with half-hearted deco accents, long submerged under many coats of chipped white enamel. They ate pho, watching thin slices of pink beef, greying in the shallow pool of hot, almost colourless broth, over sprouts and noodles. Milgrim had never seen Brown use chopsticks before. Brown definitely knew how to put away a bowl of pho, and tidily. When he was done, he opened his computer on their black Formica tabletop. Milgrim couldn't see what he was doing. He supposed there might be Wi-Fi here, leaking down from the single story above, or that Brown might be looking at files he had downloaded earlier. The old lady brought them fresh plastic tumblers of tea that might have passed for hot water, except for a peculiarly acetic aftertaste. 7 in the evening, and they were the only customers. Milgrim was feeling better. He'd asked Brown for a rise in the little park, and Brown, engrossed in whatever he was doing on the laptop, had unzipped a pocket on its bag and handed Milgrim an entire unopened 4-pack. Now, behind Brown's upright screen, Milgrim popped a second rise from its bubble and washed it down with the tea water. He'd brought his book in from the car, thinking Brown would probably work on the laptop. Now he opened it. He found a favourite chapter, An Elite of Amoral Supermen, 2. "What's that you keep reading?" asked Brown, unexpectedly, from the other side of the screen. "An Elite of Amoral Supermen," Milgrim replied, surprised to hear his own voice repeat the chapter title he had just read. "That's what you all think," said Brown, his attention elsewhere. "Liberals." Milgrim waited, but Brown said no more. Milgrim began again to read of the Beggards and the Beguines. He was well into the Quintinists when Brown spoke again.
"Yes, sir, I am."
Milgrim froze, then realised that Brown was using his cell.
"Yes, sir, I am," Brown repeated.
A pause.
"It is."
Another silence.
"Tomorrow."
Silence.
"Yes, sir."
Milgrim heard Brown close his phone, heard the rattle of china up the narrow stairwell of the house on N Street. The same sir? The man with the black car? Brown called for the bill. Milgrim closed his book. Moisture in the air threatened to fall, but didn't. Larger drops fell from trees and wires. This had arrived while they were in the faux sauna, a different kind of moisture. The mountains had gone behind indeterminate scrims of cloud, shrinking the bowl of sky in a way Milgrim found comforting.
"Do you see it?"
Brown asked.
"Turquoise. Top 1 of 3.
Milgrim squinted through the Austrian monocular Brown had used in the surveillance van in Soho. Superior optics, but he couldn't find the point of focus. Fog, lights, steel boxes stacked like bricks, angular puzzle pieces of pipe, gantries of vast derricks, all of it jiggling, overlapping, like junk at the end of a kaleidoscope. And then it came together for him. One turquoise rectangle, topmost on its pile.
"I see it," he said.
"What are the odds," Brand said, roughly taking the monocular, "of them stacking it where we can see it?"
Milgrim decided that the question was best treated as rhetorical and kept silent.
"It's off the ground,"
Brown said, pressing the padded eyepiece into the orbit of his eye.
"Up high, less likelihood of tampering.
Even with that bit of apparently better news, it seemed, Brown was still rattled by the sight. They stood facing a length of new grey 12-foot chain link, beside a long, plain-looking tavern, beige brick, out of which grew, surprisingly, a small brown, four-storey Edwardian hotel called the Princeton. Milgram had noticed how bars here seemed to possess these vestigial hotels. This one also had a large satellite dish, one of so archaic a pattern that he could imagine a younger person thinking it original to the building. Behind them was a T-intersection, a tree-lined street running down into the street the Princeton stood on. The port, Milgram thought, was like the long but oddly narrow train layout that had hugged a friend's grandfather's rec room walls. The Princeton street bordered it, not far from Cindynet's little park.
"Visible from the street," Brown said,
the monocular like something growing out of his eye.
"What are the odds against that?"
Milgram didn't know, and if he had, he wouldn't necessarily have told Brown, who was obviously made very anxious and unhappy by this. But bolstered by the second rise, he did attempt to change the subject.
"The IF's family in New York..."
"What about them?"
"They haven't been texting in Volapük, have they? You haven't needed any translation."
"They aren't texting in anything that we know of. They aren't phoning. They aren't sending emails. They haven't shown. Period."
Milgram thought about the signal grabber that Brown had used to get around the IF's habit of constantly changing phones and numbers. He remembered his own suggestion to Brown to have the NSA do it, use that echelon or something. What Brown had just said made him wonder, now, if someone might not already be doing that.
"Get in the car,"
Brown said, turning back to the parked Taurus.
"I don't need you thinking. Not tonight."